John Kyle left the Senate only 5 years ago, but in many ways it feels a lot longer than that. Kyle, now 75, spent 18 years as a Republican representing Arizona in the U.S. Senate and 8 before that as a member of the House. These days, he is keeping plenty busy in the private sector, lobbying for a D.C.-based law firm. He still travels regularly to the nation's capital as a member of the National Commission on Defense Strategy and maintains an active role at the conservative think tank, the American Enterprise Institute. But he spends most of his time here in his home state of Arizona, teaching both undergrads and law school students at Arizona State University, where his name is on the Kyle Center for Water Policy at ASU's Morrison Institute for Public Policy. We met at his home in Phoenix this week, and I began by asking him about what he missed the most and, conversely, the least about his days in Congress.
What I miss most is being right in the center of things so that you have immediate knowledge of everything that's going on. It's hard to really keep your finger on, in real time, on both the positions that people are taking and the way that things are unfolding on Capitol Hill, for example, unless you're right there in the middle of it. And, of course, I miss the ability to have a direct and fairly significant impact on national policy as I used to. But what I don't miss is all of the falter that's going on back there. It's just a very difficult place to be now with the extreme partisanship, and I don't miss that at all.
So getting into that natural transition, the Senate has always been known as a collegial body. How about now? Has it lost some of that? And with such polarization that you alluded to, how do we get bipartisanship back?
Both in the Senate and the House, it's more difficult now for the two parties to work together, and there are a variety of reasons for that. Part of it has to do with the news cycle and the way that talk radio and cable TV and a lot of the social media drive people into their respective political corners to fight with each other. And it's a constant political battle. It used to be that after an election, we'd have a year or so at least where we could try to work together, legislate, and then in the next political year, in about April or so, you'd kind of retire to your own corners and get ready to get into the ring and have the fight again. But now it's nonstop. It's 24 hours a day, and right after one election, the next one starts. So part of it is media-driven. Part of it, I think, is a decision to create a more divisive politics, both by some of the people in the media, but also as a matter of ideology, which I think, and bear in mind, I'm a conservative Republican, so I might have a biased view on this, but I think I am correct in saying that a large part of the appeal of the progressives today is to create special groups of interest, to try to build a political coalition based upon identity politics. And to some extent that can work, but to another extent, it really does divide people, and that division makes it more difficult than when you go back to Washington to get together with people on the other side to actually legislate. So, and I think, too, one can say that there's a lack of leadership. In the past, leaders were able to overcome some of the more base instincts of the pure partisans. Today, it's more difficult to do that, and the American people reacted, I think, to some extent in electing Donald Trump as president. But until they really punish the pure partisans, and I'm not speaking here of people with strong ideologies. There's a big difference between having a strong ideology either on the left or the right and being a partisan politician. And until the people punish the pure partisans, I think that will continue.
You were on the Senate Finance Committee in an important position when it comes to fiscal policy. And many conservatives at the time that you left the Senate were very concerned about increasing the federal deficit, the deficit hawks. So now that Congress is rewriting the tax code and we now have a new budget from the president, adding all these hundreds of billions, trillions even of dollars to the deficit, does it have you concerned?
Yes, of course it has me concerned. There's only one thing that has me more concerned, and that's the national security posture of the United States. our defenses have been allowed to deteriorate to a dangerous level. And because of the fact that we are now, once again, unfortunately, engaged in peer-to-peer competition with Russia and with China, we have to rebuild those military assets. And this is not to say anything of the North Koreans or the Iranians and the continuing fight against terrorists. So the first obligation of the federal government is to protect the people. That's going to cost some money. What I lament is the fact that Democrats in the Congress basically played transactional politics and said, well, we agree that the defense has to be rebuilt, and that's going to cost money. But our price for agreeing to that is more expenditure on other things as well. And so Republicans had to go along with that if they wanted to see the military, at least the first steps taken to help to rebuild the military. The answer, of course, is to attack the so-called entitlement spending programs of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security in the way that benefits are calculated, not to take any benefits away from people, but you can put them on a path to fiscal discipline and gradually whittle this debt down if you make a few changes that, frankly, people would not even notice over time, but which is very difficult to do politically because demagogues love to whip the issue, and people become concerned to the point that they punish politicians who want the reform.
I just have to ask you, because it sounds like you're still passionate about a lot of different things. It sounds like you still look to that center of power and wish maybe a part of you wishes that you were still there. Would you ever consider a return to the Senate under any circumstance?
No, and I don't wish I was still there. What you had asked me before is there something I miss? Yes, I do, but would I go back? No. I mean, I had the best job in the whole world for 18 years in the Senate. I was the whip of the Republican Conference for 5 years at the end, and it was a great position from which you could get things done. But there's a time for everything, and when you get to be my age with 26 years of experience in elective office, it's time to let somebody else have a crack at it.
That's former Arizona Senator John Kyle. And next hour in the show, the second part of our chat on what he thinks of his successor, the soon-to-be erstwhile Jeff Flake, plus his opinion on President Trump, his thoughts on Russian meddling, and where he feels the Mueller investigation is heading. In the second part of our conversation we had this week at his home in Phoenix, we discussed the travails of his successor in the Senate, the conduct of the President of the United States, and the Russia investigation. And we begin here with Jeff Flake's decision on what he did 5 years ago, and that's step away from the Senate, but only after one term.
Jeff is making a case that it is important to for Americans to view the office of the presidency with respect, and that has ramifications in our foreign policy, for example, as well as domestic policy. And I think he's right about that. Whether I would have said some of the things that he said, like he has said them, is another matter. You do need to get along with the person who has been elected by the people of the country as the president. And I said that when Barack Obama was president as a Republican, and I would say it today with Donald Trump. That doesn't mean that you don't criticize them when you disagree with them, but you also need to work with them when their policies are supportable. And I think one would have to acknowledge that whatever the personality of the president, he has selected a good group of people, especially in the area of national security matters, which is of great importance to me, and that we are beginning to see some benefits to those people serving in high positions with respect to our national security policy.
So what do you think of President Trump after a year in office? He's pretty unconventional.
Well, he's very unconventional. I think people probably would go back to Andrew Jackson to find somebody like him as president. And I don't like his style. Much of it is boorish. I think he's his own worst enemy. He could be much more effective if he were more politique, more diplomatic. Of course, that's one of the things that people like about him, the fact that he isn't that way. But I think there's a happy medium. You don't have to be politically correct all the time, as that is defined by the left and by the media. But I think you do have to acknowledge that the way you act has an impact on the way foreign leaders view you, and as well as your success domestically. But as I taught in London for a couple of weeks for Arizona State University at King's College there, and people were very concerned about what would happen to America with Trump as president. I said, well, the good news about the United States is that we have a government with a lot of checks and balances. And so even though you may not like the president, you may not like the way he acts, it's very difficult for one person to totally turn our country around. And I think every president has found that out to their chagrin. They're not dictator, they're president. The Congress is an equal branch. The courts will slap them down sometimes, and the American people will react. So Trump is a phenomenon. It has to be dealt with, but we have a system which fortunately is capable of doing that.
When he was elected over a year ago, there was some speculation that maybe you would be called upon to be part of the administration. At any time, were you asked to be a part of the Trump administration? And would you?
I was asked to be a part of the transition, and I said that I would do that with this understanding that under no circumstances would I accept any position in the administration. Not because it was a Donald Trump administration. In fact, I think someone that lacks experience in government needs people who are willing to serve in government in that situation, even though they may not particularly like the way that he acts personally or didn't like his campaign. But if they share his vision of national security policy, for example, and they have something to offer, they should do it. I'm simply past the time when I want to do that anymore. If I wanted to do that, I would have stayed in the Senate. I think I could have been reelected, and I would have done it. So I simply didn't want to continue to serve. I was the person that helped Senator Sessions become the Attorney General. That was my contribution to the effort, and after that, I packed my bags and came home.
So with the Mueller investigation ongoing right now, and we mentioned Russia, and there's testimony in front of Congress today about meddling in our elections coming up the midterms. That story, we don't know where it ends. But from your perspective, where do you think we're headed?
I think there are a couple of things that we need to continue to keep our eye on. First of all, I'm very pleased that a lot of my colleagues on the left have finally discovered that Russia can be a threat to the United States. For years, those of us on the conservative side tried to make that case, and we were very rebuffed, frankly, by our friends on the left. Now they see Russia as a threat. Well, I'm glad they do, because, in fact, Russia is a threat. And here's where some of the Trump believers are wrong when they, in order to protect the Trump election, he was elected. He's president. It's happened. It's done, okay? You don't have to deny that the Russians have malevolent interests in order to protect the president. Both things can be true. So there's a lot of hypocrisy in Washington. Surprise, surprise.
that doesn't seem to change. We've already talked about how divided our politics are, and I think one of the things that I've reported on in the last few months is that while our politics might be divided and polarized, the electorate isn't necessarily as polarized. Do you think that people are as separated and polarized as we think, or is there more middle ground that's out there that we don't see right now?
I wish it were the latter. I'm afraid that the populace is quite polarized too. Now, not everybody cares about policy and politics. In fact, there's a big swath of folks out there that are just busy making a living, and they basically don't trust politicians, and pox on both your houses. But for those who are involved and who read and listen and so on, it seems to me that there is an increasing polarization. And some of what's happening here is a lack of courage on the part of politicians who see a very divided populace, who see people who are really hard over, don't think that they can change their mind, are not courageous enough to try to educate and lead, and therefore they just succumb to that pressure. And they themselves then become more radicalized. So it's kind of a non-virtuous circle, if you will.
Senator John Kyle, sir, thanks for your generous time, and good to see you again.
Always appreciate talking to you. Thank you.
And that's KJZZ's Phil Latzman.